Coming up on Smart Tech Today, Matthew Casanelli and I sit down to fix his problem. That's right, his LifeX light strip isn't working, and we've got some troubleshooting tips for him to try that may be helpful for you. We also talk about Google lowering Nest's camera quality to save the internet's resources, a whole bunch about HomeKit and Eve, and a recipe for one of the most delicious cakes I've ever had. So much to check out, so stay tuned. Smart Tech Today is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? Well, LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
This episode of Smart Tech Today is brought to you by Molecule. Molecule is reimagining the future of your health with clean air, starting with the air purifier. For 10% off your first air purifier order, visit molecule.com and enter code STT. Welcome to Smart Tech Today, the show where we explain the exciting, the dynamic, and the sometimes confusing subject that is the Internet of Things. I am Micah Sargent.
And I am Matthew Casanelli.
Yeah, you are. And today, hello, hi, how are you?
Doing good.
Nice weather we're having.
Is it? No, it's not.
I never know anymore. Let me try that again. Ready? Pretend I queued this up. Nice weather we're having. Oh, by the way, Matthew, I'm about to play some sound over the thing.
Thanks for letting me know.
Nice weather we're having.
It's California. There's no thunderstorms.
I can't say that I love that because I don't. I wish that it rained and stormed a little bit more here, but alas, it does not.
How are you making that sound effect, Micah?
Oh, that would be an excellent application. Yes, because I will get emails and tweets. That's what those are called. TWAMs. Ecamm. Nope, that's not Ecamm. That's another great company that makes the other application that I use. Rogue Amoeba, R-O-G-U-E, Amoeba, A-M-O-E-B-A. They're not a sponsor or anything like that, but Rogue Amoeba makes some excellent applications for the Mac, all sorts of audio applications, loopback, audio hijack, which a lot of people use to record their stuff locally. And the one I'm using is called Farago. It is a soundboard application where you can load up custom sounds all your own, or you can use the ones that are built in, which are the ones that are the ones that I, the ones I'm using currently are the ones that are built in. So you know what? Let's pretend that we are out and walking around with some people. That's a loud crowd. Not quite the crowd I was looking for. We're out and about. We're not social distancing. We can pretend like that's
quite
the case.
Down in the hallway out there.
Anyway, that is Farago, and I wanted to do some tests with it, and I did, and that's what happened. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about some news in the smart tech spectrum. First of all, let's talk about, I saw you put out a call for some help with your LifeX setup, and tell me what's going on. Tell me what happened.
This was pretty funny because last week I was like extolling the benefits of all the LifeX lights and how great they are. And then immediately after that, and since then, I haven't been able to get that light strip to work anymore. I'm not sure what happened. I honestly, I'll attribute it to being on the beta because there's probably something weird set up there. And I did try to set it up like 20 times before I actually found my HomeKit code. Which is only on a piece of paper that they give you. And I found it in my trash can and I was like, oh my God.
No.
There's a HomePass is a good app to keep your codes in, by the way.
It absolutely is. You're on a beta of the app?
Just iOS. So I'm not sure.
Oh, iOS beta.
Yeah. So it's just like when I try to do it, it's like it cannot access HomeKit and I do not know why. But
so you had it connected at one point. But now it is no longer connected. Yes.
Yeah. Like right before I was like changing all the lights and stuff like that. And then it just hasn't worked since then. So,
so one day it just stopped appearing in the home app.
I think it just had been not responding probably ever since the first beta. And I just like kind of procrastinated on trying to get it to work. And then, it just like started messing up and I couldn't get it installed on the second one. So
interesting. Yeah. I've had a few issues with that myself, not with the LifeX bulbs direct, in particular, but with some, Philips Hue lights actually. And what made me realize that it was definitely an issue with the beta, and not an issue with Hue was that some of my Hue stuff still worked. It was only some of it that wasn't. And since it's all running via the bridge, as long as the bridge is connected, all of them should in theory work on their own. You know, it would require a lot more to be going wrong for some of them not to work and some of them to work. And so it was showing no response. Mm-hmm. And for me, all I had to do was force quit the home app, but it sounds like yours is a bit of a bigger issue.
Yeah. I tried to restart my devices and everything and you're supposed to unplug it and replug it in 5 times to reset it. And I've probably done that at least 5 times. So I'm sitting there unplugging and plugging it in like 25 times in a row. And then it goes through. I try to like pair it to Wi-Fi to set it up, like on there. And even just like the HomeKit stuff isn't working. So it's just been, I don't know. It's just wonky. I mean, that is like my fault, but I guess I shouldn't complain about it on a podcast then.
that's what we do this for. do you have any, so I guess the next step would be, and maybe it's something that you've already considered, is just having a device that doesn't run a beta. That's what I'll do. When all else fails, I'll pull out my old iPhone and I will set things up with that one. Oh, look at that 2-camera array. How beautiful.
Only two.
And I'll use that to set stuff up if everything else fails. So I don't know if you've done that yet or if you've considered it, but that might be the next step.
I do not have, I did the iPhone upgrade program, so I don't have previous devices. And then I should ask my girlfriend because she does not run betas, which is intelligent, unlike me.
Yeah, you can use her device to set it up. That would be great. You'd have to, let's have you report back on that. You know, I'm sure you've got some more things to try, but if that ends up doing it and getting it set up, I think that that's great advice for anybody who is setting devices up. Now, this is a great piece, in fact, because I just, Anthony, one of our producers and editors here at Twit, he was showing me how to use my iPhone as a webcam. And I didn't realize that it was possible to do without some hacky-backy stuff. And The Verge has put out an article talking about how to use your Android or iOS device as a webcam. Have you done any of this? Have you tried it?
I have not yet. And the reason I actually put this in the document, not just besides it being a good tip, was that I have a feeling that I inspired this article because I tweeted about how Apple should enable Apple should enable iOS devices as webcams for Macs. People could immediately have high quality multicam setups with great audio with just your phone, iPad, and AirPods, and like and you could have like ultra wide studio with the new iPads and then switch scenes with the Apple Watch. And I got like 1,000 likes on it, which is wild.
Making me drool over here. That sounds great.
But I think I saw the guy who wrote this article engage with it, so I thought that was funny. There is a couple different ways people were replying. It's like, oh, you can already do this through QuickTime. And it's like, yeah, but if Apple just made like a studio app or something like that, they could make it much smoother than a lot of the way. But this article does go through like it's possible. And there's a couple different apps you can get. I was reading this in Apple News, and it was kind of, the screenshots were blowing my mind, or not blowing my mind, but just like, it was not a great reading experience in that app.
it does make me a little, I don't know, sketched out sometimes. It makes me feel a little concerned you downloading a bunch of third party apps and streaming because essentially it's called Epoch Cam is the one that they recommend for iOS, and you can essentially with your phone on the network, on the Wi-Fi network, you can find it on the Mac and use it as a camera. And I don't know, it just, it kind of sketches me out. I don't know.
Yeah. And also, like, I mean, we've had some issues lately with just our network connection, and like, latency is not a fun game with, especially like in general, I was kind of going towards streaming, and like, that's why I was saying multicam and you could switch and stuff like that. And if one camera is delayed from the audio, then the other and things like that, like that's essentially a no-go, because then it just starts to get wild and you don't want like echoes or anything like that too. So having it all like connected centrally is what I was going for. Versus it's like you can technically do it, but whether or not you should do it with this is a different story.
Yeah. So I'm reading about it now. And the other thing with Epoch Cam is it's and $7.99 is a lot less expensive than a upcharged Logitech camera, external Logitech camera. So, you know, it's not that big of a deal, but it does cost $7.99 to unlock all the features. Otherwise, it makes your it puts a watermark on there. It makes the resolution very small, et cetera. And you can't use the microphone on the actual phone. But by upgrading to by paying the $7.99 for the pro version, then you can get the all that stuff unlocked. Two, an important thing to note is that a lot of people are using Zoom to communicate, and this will not work with the most recent version of Zoom. Somehow it breaks compatibility. So
maybe the security update.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
Beck might say something about the connection.
I just wish that we could have this baked into the software.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be nice. That's what I want. And you're so right that it would be such a good move by these companies to do that. Would be lauded.
It's just like I was saying to someone else, like maybe, but I could see before it not being just like the number one priority. It's like a cool thing, but number two or number three. And it's like, well, hopefully things have changed, or just like your priorities change when the entire world changes. So it'd be more especially fun to play around with this kind of stuff when everybody's just at home with their devices all the time.
Especially given the marketing videos and things that have been put out there about the new iPad Pro. One of them was showing sort of a multicam setup with iPhones and the iPad as the main camera or as the sort of driver. And So if you're already pushing this idea that you can create a studio using just your iPhone and iPad, then let's take that one step farther. I can already, when I plug in my iPad, I've used the software before with Ecamm Live, I can bring up the display of my iPad. So to be able to access the camera on there too would be very cool.
Yeah. I mean, you can open the camera app and look through it, but
yes,
that's still like
you're getting just, a scaled down
the whole
version.
Setup and like, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people were saying too, they want to like put their phone on top of that TV and use it on like the Apple TV or something too. That would be cool. Do you happen to remember that commercial? Because I want to try that.
I'll have to look it up and I'll include it in the show notes if I do. But I just remember seeing it was one of the iPad Pro launch videos with the LiDAR camera. And one of the things that they showed was them sort of in a studio setting with the iPad as one of the devices. So, yeah, we'll find that.
Because I'm testing the new one. So I'm very curious, because that was like one of the reasons I was like, I had technically have like a bunch of 4K camera sitting in front of me and I can't use any of them for webcams, but I've always wanted to do like almost like I don't know if you know how they did the Matrix shots. It was like a bunch of different cameras in a row around in a circle, and then they just like in editing like pan across them really quickly, and it's like just do that in your house with your iPhone and iPad and Mac webcams and stuff like that.
Oh my goodness. That would
bullet
be
time.
Something.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh my gosh. We have too much time on our hands. Now this See, I have to disagree with this article. So this is on Cult of Mac. During coronavirus quarantine, Apple Watch is some people's best fitness friend. Okay, so to be clear, in the article, it does say some people's best fitness friend. The Apple Watch has been my enemy, my frenemy. Yeah. When it comes to fitness, because it just keeps telling me, hey, you're not doing a very good job right now, dude. You could be doing better in this time. Listen, I'm mostly joking about that in the sense that I do benefit from a little bit of push, but it can be kind of like, oh, I already know I'm not doing a good job.
I don't like the ones in the morning where it's like, you're usually along further by this time of day. It's like, okay, like... Some of the notifications, I think, are a little over aggressive, but if I didn't have like the stand goals and activity goals, I don't think I'd have any awareness right now of how active I'm being. So like, I even just specifically put this in here because I feel like Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I kind of just like didn't go on that many walks, and I started to realize that I was like not hitting my goals or whatever. And I definitely like that awareness got back, like fed back into the system. And I was going on a walk earlier today. So, staying active.
Hey, that's good. Yeah.
I agree. Like the screen time ones. I mean, I was saying to you before the show, I just did a bunch of like shortcuts work in the last week. And my screen time was like, it's up 158%. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah, that's never happened to me before.
Batman.
Yeah, I was plowing through some stuff, so.
Yowza, bowza. Wow. Well, speaking of not going in to work, or not going out and about, what is it, Niantic? It makes several different services that are different apps, including Harry Potter Wizards Unite and the application called? Pokemon Go. And then the third one whose name escapes me. And each of these, you know, the whole point of it is to be walking around on a map and interacting with things in the actual world. Well, we have shelter at home orders in place. And so it's difficult for folks to be able to do that. So they've been coming up with clever ways of allowing folks to continue playing the games in these quarantine situations. So now, Niantic has created a feature for Harry Potter Wizards Unite that has the night bus. And the night bus comes and it lets you be whisked away to Hogwarts Castle, where you can play some of the features that were only available by walking to local fortresses and things like that. I've seen this with Pokemon Go, not the night bus, obviously, but sort of in-game mechanisms to allow people to continue to play. You know, these games for some people are daily bits of enjoyment that they have played for years. I'm looking at you, Rene Ritchie. Pokemon Go is kind of his thing. And I've met friends' parents. I'm speaking specifically, of course, in this instance. But I have a friend whose parents are like around the world with some of the top-rated Pokemon Go players. And that's not an exaggeration. They genuinely are some of the best Pokemon Go players in the entire world and have this sort of elite group of friends or group of other players who they talk to and are always on the bleeding edge of what's coming out in Pokemon Go. And so I think about them and Renee and others who play these games who want to be able to continue to do those things, you know what I mean? And so it's nice that despite the fact that the original mechanism of the game was intended to get you out and going, that they are also being, aware of the fact that we can't do that and not encouraging folks to go out when they shouldn't be.
Yeah, I like it. And just the on-brand adaptation of it, of zipping off to Hogwarts on the night bus instead of actually traveling around. I like that.
Yeah, pretty good. Let's see what's next on the list. So Facebook has, listen, there are a lot of people on Facebook.
How do you feel, Micah?
There are a lot of people
just
on
saying
Facebook.
The word Facebook made you like gargle.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. You know how I feel about Facebook? Yeah, there you go. So Facebook, ugh, but there are a lot of people on Facebook. And so if any site or service should launch a symptom checker, I guess it should be Facebook. Have gotten a million responses per week and have started to publish data from the coronavirus symptom checker that gives broad information about those responses. I don't like the idea of Facebook having this data on people. But when it's a place that gets a lot of eyes and more eyes than other online services, then I kind of just have to go ahead and say, okay, this is a good thing, as much as it pains me in my heart and my soul.
So there are some upsides to having a worldwide social network. But I mean, I guess it does say the survey responses are sent to the Carnegie Mellon University researchers and aren't accessible to Facebook. So that's good.
Yes.
But it's just facilitating, going through Facebook still is like, it's hard to trust them regardless of if they say that that's happening.
Yeah. I don't know. I like I said, to have the eyes is, and to have the attention is great that it is making use of that along with Carnegie Mellon, to get that data. But I mean, if it's being published on Facebook, then Facebook technically has that data, even if it's, you know, not accessible by Facebook. There's some gray area there for sure. I found this fascinating. So because the other day I had logged on to, I'm still trying to support local businesses and stuff like that. So occasionally in a given week, I will order via DoorDash, for example. Mm-hmm. And so I had logged on to do that, and DoorDash had temporarily closed down its delivery service. You could do pickup, but you could not do delivery. And so it made me kind of think about these different companies, Uber, DoorDash, others that are doing this driving system, Lyft. And so, you know, what are they doing in this time? Are people still taking Uber rides? Are people still taking Lyft rides? How are they keeping their drivers safe, et cetera? But one of the ways, you know, Uber, given that it does not have as much access to people taking rides and things like that, is kind of trying to pivot. And so it has launched a new pair of services. One's Uber Connect and the other is Uber Direct. So Uber Direct is doing deliveries from pharmacies and pet stores, and Uber Connect is a same day courier service so that users can send items to one another. So Uber Connect, I can say, oh, I still have Leo's iPad here, his new iPad Pro, and I need to get that to him. I don't think I would use Uber Connect to do this, though, because how can I trust that it's going to get where it needs to go? But in theory, I would Uber Connect it to him, and that way I'm never making the delivery myself, and we sort of do a touchless transaction. And then Uber Direct, you know, my dogs need food, and so I can get them food that way. This makes sense, I think, to be able to provide this service. And that way, because I think I have to think about this in terms of less than the company itself and more about the individuals, earning money. I'm specifically, you know, for folks who, it was a large chunk of their earnings to be a driver, and then to have this hit and people, you know, are no longer taking these rides and things like that, that's a big bummer. And, you know, it's for safety and security, but my heart goes out to people who, you know, I've talked to plenty of drivers who are like, oh yeah, this is, you know, 3/4 of my income, or this is what I do. And so to offer them other ways to continue to make that money, I think is a good thing.
I agree. It's like my gut reaction was Uber's like putting these people in harm's way so I don't have to, kind of. But at the same time, it's like people who made the investment to be an Uber driver or something like that now kind of have no choice because you're already in it and it hasn't paid out yet or something like that. So it's cool. I mean, I mean, especially just like as a consumer being able to send somebody something directly with Uber like that is, it makes sense. It's like a good extension of what you would expect from them, but doesn't have to be getting in a car with somebody because nobody wants to do that right now.
Right. Ugh, breathing and space.
They're also like, yeah, of course. I mean, it almost goes without saying at this point that any deliveries are no contact.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about the Eve button. I have a couple of these. It's a little battery powered button that you can use for your HomeKit setup. You can also use it within the app to control certain things. And it basically is a stateless button. So in HomeKit, for example, one press does a thing, two presses does a thing, and then a long press does a thing. So you have three options, three actions you can tie to the button. And while I love the products that Eve makes on the whole, the Eve button, it's a Bluetooth LE device, and that means that that battery power, you know, can last a really long time. Mm-hmm. But what happens is after a while, if you don't use the button, it will sort of go into a sleep mode, and then you press it and then it reconnects and then it sends the signal and, you know, the command that you send out. And so by the time you do that, it's just there's a heavy delay. That I don't quite enjoy from the Eve button. And frankly, the same goes for, I have a Logitech Pop button as well. Same thing, Bluetooth LE. It I does the single
problems
press.
With that.
Say again?
I don't have any problems with that.
The Pop is not, I apologize. Yeah, I don't think the Pop is Bluetooth LE. It has a hub. However, I have had issues where in fact, it says in practical HomeKit use, it's proven a bit less reliable than the Eve device with somewhat more frequent responsiveness issues. It's also no longer supported by Logitech, although it's still available for purchase. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was no longer available. I mean, supported by the company. I have one and I've had connectivity issues where I've had to reset the hub and the Pop itself over and over and over again. It looks nice, but I just have had connectivity issues. Now, again, and in fact, this is another thing that's said in this article. Given some small delay in Bluetooth processing, a capacitive touch face would leave you wondering if the touch registered, if only for a second. That delay would become frustrating very quickly and lead to a poor user experience. We're talking about how it has a mechanical switch to do the actual actions. But even with that actual...
The Logitech one or...
The Eve button, sorry.
Okay.
Even with the hardware button press, it still can be flaky on registering my commands in the sense that it just takes a while longer than one would expect. So I almost always prefer Wi-Fi connected options to Bluetooth LE connected options, especially when it comes to these devices. And one example of that is the Hue dimmer switch is able to be a HomeKit enabled switch where each of the four buttons, the on and off buttons, and then the two dimmers in the middle, each of those can become switches that you can control your HomeKit setup with. And because it's connected to the hub, there you go. The dimmer switch. The Hue hub. It is responsive. And it, what's nice is that it comes with a magnetic back that you can fasten to a wall or place somewhere. And then the button, the remote can be taken and placed somewhere as well, can be taken off of the base. So I really like the Hue dimmer switch as my choice. And in fact, I have two of them in my home that are currently in use. Even though I haven't set up my whole HomeKit home, those were some of the first products that I set up because they control so much in my home and they're responsive and work quite well. I've got the Eve button hanging around somewhere and it's just kind of sitting there going, are you going to use me? And I'm like, I don't know. Are you going to act right?
I've got those Hue dimmer switches too. I use one in my bathroom and then one in our kitchen. And those are great just because like both places we realized we do not want to use voice at all to just like turn on the lights. It's you want them immediately. And I did actually just set up a home automation so that at night the Hue dimmer, the bathroom one, automatically changes to like 1% so that I don't turn on the lights at full brightness and then shine it into the bedroom from the bathroom. But like the kitchen one is really nice too. And then now that I think about it, yeah, the Logitech Pop I use every night to turn off the lights and then turn on our little sound machine that's on a Wemo switch. And that pop is very satisfying, just a little pop each time. So I should make a sound effects for all the different buttons and just just to compare them against that. Ooh, you could put them in your soundboard.
Yeah, that'd be kind of fun.
Just imitate, I don't know, smart home products on audio. Like everybody, what a great podcast that would be.
I would love it. Everybody would be going, please give us more. We love this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, actually, I think we got some feedback requesting that. So perfect.
Oh dear, I think not. Let's see. Sorry, I was reading your message. Now, Sony had announced a while back that they were going to be offering HomeKit and AirPlay 2 enabled televisions. And they have officially released those devices. They're available from $599 and up. So with the HomeKit control, you can control things like turning on and off the television and some HomeKit automations and things like that, which are nice. And then, of course, AirPlay 2, which lets you play music and videos to the device. But also with AirPlay 2, you can have multi-routed audio. So I can, for example, say I'm listening to a song on my iPhone. I want it to play on my HomePod that's in the kitchen. I want it to play on my Sony television in the living room. And I want it to play on my, I don't know, Sonos speaker that's upstairs that has AirPlay 2 support. So you can choose a bunch of different devices to play to, and it will play to those different devices and you can control them, you know, independently. So AirPlay 2 enabled television, super cool to have. And then, like I said, the HomeKit support adds even more functionality, which is kind of nice. So that's exciting. I mean, Sony makes some great televisions along with, of course, LG and Samsung. And so those kind of three big players is pretty cool.
Yeah, these are nice. I do love that the 9 to 5 Mac headline is like starting at $599 and going up to $9,999. It's like there is a lot of very expensive TVs in here and they're not all $600. Yeah, that's good. I don't actually know if I would use the AirPlay 2 feature of TVs because we have a HomePod near it. I mean, like if you don't have a HomePod, that's an obvious situation. But if you do, I just like never find myself using the TV for music, even though it's like nice to put the lyrics up there and stuff. I do have a shortcut I'll put in the show notes that I named Sing Along that I came up with a while back that starts playing something on your music and then opens the music app on the TV so that you can like watch the lyrics and stuff like that. I guess I don't know if that would work on one of these TVs though. I'd have to Sony send me one of these TVs. I can test it out.
Do you hear that, Sony? Tell us about the new HomeKit accessories that Apple has released to has put on their website.
Our homies from Eve do have some more products in there now. The smart plug and power meter, which is, I actually have one of those in the closet over there. And then the water meter as well, which went off one time actually for us. It was a false alarm and it was a little, those are pretty intense alarms because it's being like your house is flooding. But thankfully it hasn't done it since then. So
that's good.
I mean, that's the point at least, like is that I'm not flooding my house. So it's a good thing that it's not going off. But also the one time then the false alarm is like, oh God, maybe I should check it. But then there's also first alert, one link, smart smoke and carbon monoxide alarm.
Mouthful of the product,
but yeah, we had an inspector and he was like, you don't have for like windows. And then he was like, you don't have your smoke alarms properly installed in the right spot. And we were like, great. What? Now we have,
where are they supposed to be?
I think it was just like, we have a kind of a weird house. And so it was there's one above the outside of the kitchen, but there is one in the kitchen. And he's like, you need to have all of them. And, but it was like, man, we got, can't try to get the guy for the windows. And he's like, no, you have to fix all these things in your house too. It's like, shoot.
Oh, that's, yeah, that kind of sucks.
I mean, I guess I'm not,
it's good. But, yeah, it's good, but. That does, you know, like, oh, I thought you were here to do this. Stop trying to tell me to do this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I legally have to do that now.
That stinks. Whoops. I mean, I didn't realize that there was, I mean, I guess I kind of understood that there was proper placement, but I didn't know how exactly that all worked. That's interesting.
I forgot also the quad lock bike mount kit. Say that.
Quad lock clop.
I used to have a bike mount type thing like this that I tried to record a video, like riding to work or something like that. And it was just incredibly bouncy. But this stuff is good if you use Strava mostly, I'd say. But yeah, some just new Apple approved, basically. I will say, I mentioned last week, and I don't want to like rag on it too much, but the Eve Energy one that they're selling is the one that has the buzzing that I mentioned last week. So
yuck.
That is a slight concern. I'm here. They did send me the products a while ago, so it could be maybe like the batch I got or something too. Maybe I'll contact them and try to follow up, but just wanted to mention it because that did bug me a little bit.
Yeah, that is,
it's a little bit remiss not to mention it. Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, this is, I just saw this too. Apple has a new, now Apple releases different badges for different products. So for example, Works with Apple HomeKit is one, and there are certain requirements that they have in order to be able to market your product with the Works with Apple HomeKit badge. So once you pass all of the requirements, then you get to use this badge on your product and sell it in stores. Otherwise, you know, the lawyers come after you. There's also the Made for iPhone program, MFI program, and that applies to headphones and different devices like that. There's now a Works with Apple Health badge that the company has announced that helps folks create marketing, you know, stuff, marketing materials that make it very clear that Apple Health is able to be used with these apps and services. So this is exciting because to me, what that means is Apple is paying, they already are paying attention to health, but this just tells me that they're paying even more attention to health, that this is, you know, front of mind, and that we'll probably see a lot of companies, or rather not companies, but developers and app makers saying, hey, you know, we're making sure that we have all of these things in place so that you know that this works with Apple Health and here's how.
Yeah, it's good. It's like, I expect this to see this on websites and stuff like that now. And it's a solid, just like quick indicator that, you know, for sure it does work with the health app, because that's probably getting more and more confusing over time.
What, yeah, it's kind of a bummer. So I was just saying, some of them don't. And there are sometimes where I'll download an app or what have you, and then it's a, you know, it's a health app, but it doesn't work with the health app. It's like, okay, well, I'm getting rid of that one. Cause I like that centralized data storage place where I can make sure that all that information is available there, and that other apps that I use can make use of it as well. So, yeah.
I have a random, very specific question, but I'm curious if I should use this when I make shortcuts that work with Apple Health, because I do make little graphics. The badge? And yeah, I feel like it makes sense because it's the Apple app and it's using, there's a log health samples and find health samples actions and shortcuts. And so you can log like every different type of workout, most of the food and health data that you can put in there can be pulled out with shortcuts too. It doesn't work with Apple Watch activity, which is a shame, but there's like actually a lot of cool stuff. Even I did one I don't remember if it does hand washing. I think I wanted them to add it, but I had one for like, just like that I brushed my teeth, and you can keep track of brushing your teeth.
Toothbrushing. I know. Yeah. I think there was actually a request from one of our listeners for a toothbrushing, adding the fact that they brush their teeth. So if you've got that shortcut, you should definitely share it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I don't see why you can't use the badge. It's, you're essentially creating apps by creating shortcuts. Let's see. I got an email, and then I got another email. And then I got a notification when I launched the Nest app, all of them letting me know that Google was planning to and did lower camera quality for its Nest cameras in order to conserve the internet's resources. So this is not surprising to me. This is something that, you know, YouTube was dropping the resolution for videos by default. Some companies are being required to by other countries. Did I say some companies? Yeah, some companies are being required to by other countries drop the bitrate and things like that. And so Google is saying, okay, look, y'all have all your Nest cams out there and you're tuned into them from elsewhere and you're doing it at 1080p or whatever, you know, depending on what Nest cam you have, you might have better or worse resolution. And so what we're going to do is try to cut back on that. And so they did that by lowering the camera quality. And I'm happy that they're doing this. I think it makes sense. Anything that keeps, like today, the show has not had to stop randomly because the video quality has been good and there's not been any cutouts. So maybe it's because Google lowered Nest camera quality. I don't know, but I'm happy that they're doing this. And then I'm also happy with how much information they gave. They really made sure that I knew, you know, like I said, two emails and a actual push notification all to let me know, hey, look, this is what's happening. Here's a little bit of an information. A Nest Cam IQ, which is one of Nest's cameras, uses roughly 400 gigabytes of data per month at its highest settings. Cutting this down to medium high shaves that down to 300 gigabytes. So a whole 100 gigabytes of data saved.
I mean, and it's like 99% of it is nothing also. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's just like the street outside and stuff like that.
Yes, so it's nothing it makes important. Sense
that, I mean, I saw like a bunch of people are mad because you're paying for higher quality and now you can't get it. And you can, I mean, but of course you can turn it back up. But I guess it is, I mean, your video quality seems great. So maybe you have a couple neighbors with Nest cams and now they're not
been what it was.
Streaming 4K HDR.
They're slurping up all that bandwidth.
The sidewalk.
let's see. Up next, Nest thermostat owners have saved over 50 billion kilowatt hours of energy. This is a report from Google itself, or rather was shared via Google. And Nest thermostat users, so those are the learning thermostats that can help you save money independently, is also doing a huge thing by calculating the amount of energy that has been saved overall. And 50 billion kilowatt hours of energy. That's incredible. It's enough energy to light up the entire planet for 5 days. You could drive every electric vehicle around the world. You could bake 150 cookies for every person on Earth. And it's
just
about 3
billion.
Just so everybody
knows, Google is giving these stats to us. Not, Michael's not just calculating this on the fly.
Why would you tell them that?
Quick, what's 3,000, or what's the, dang it, I totally just messed it up.
I already know what you're referencing. Yeah, the pies, like, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Or Kevin can only do math if it's pies.
Yeah.
I like how I just like we have this symbiosis of office references that just like almost go unsaid.
Yeah. You said a couple words and I was like, I already know what reference he's making.
Exactly.
hold on. Let me run this calculation real quick. That's about $3 billion in energy bill savings, according to my brain calculations, and not this article from Google.
Cups of tea do you think you could make for every person on Earth using this energy?
Let's see. That's carry the 2, 7 squared, 37. I think that's about one cup of tea for every person on Earth every day for an entire year.
Wow, that's very impressive that you did that calculation.
Yeah, it also happens to be enough energy to make a cup of coffee for every person on Earth every day for an entire year. It's interesting how that works. Anyway, I think this is incredible, truly. And I'd be curious to see calculations from other smart thermostat owners. The good thing about Google's Nest is that they got into this early. And by getting into it early, they are partnered with a lot of different energy utility companies. And so there are many times there are rebates in place. And for example, my mom's partner, he was able to buy, or not even buy, he went to his utility provider and went to a page and signed up to have someone come and install a Google Nest thermostat for free at his home. And just now
it'll save the cost of it.
That
makes sense.
Over time. And so by doing that, there are lots of Google Nest thermostats in people's homes. And that means that, you know, they can calculate this and know how much energy is being saved. And I would like to see this from, Ecobee, for example, which is the thermostat that I use and enjoy, and to see how they or what calculations, you know, they have in place for energy saved.
That would be nice.
What's next? I see Fitbit, Stanford, and my old pal Scripps are working together on a research project.
Yeah. We have a couple articles, one from Wired. We've kind of talked about this as it would make sense for wearables to be used to detect symptoms of stuff like this early on and just like use the wider range of people who have them. So now they're all, you can tie it together with a Fitbit, and basically they're starting like a whole research project to make sure this can actually be used properly.
Yeah. This is obviously the more companies that are working together or organizations in this case that are working together, to figure out what services, what devices, and what different companies can do to sort of help check the ecosystem, I guess is the best way to put it, of folks who are or are not impacted by COVID-19 is great. And, you know, Kinza is the smart thermometer maker that I purchased the ear thermometer from and use every day. It has a health weather service that it's publishing that includes information on different temperatures across the United States and elsewhere. The German government has their smartwatch data donation app. So a lot of different countries, a lot of different governments, and a lot of different companies are all coming together because they all can provide data or help centrally collect data. And we have the option to be a part of that or not be a part of that. And I think that's really fantastic and exciting that, you know, when you get these health devices out to people, that they can be leveraged in this way in crises like the one that we're dealing with now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Scripps said that back in January, they could accurately predict flu hotspots better than the CDC with just 47,000 Fitbit users anonymous data, which is good, but it's basically like they can already do this. And so they're like, let's make this official. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw something like this from Apple eventually, but I bet they are taking their time to get it right type of thing.
Yeah. Privacy implications are definitely something to consider. Well, folks, we are going to move on from the news, but before we get there, I want to tell you about Molecule. So this episode of Smart Tech Today is, of course, brought to you by Molecule. Molecule now offers its breakthrough Pico, P-E-C-O technology across a range of products, providing a solution for the entire home when it comes to air purification. It's a whole different kind of science that destroys these little molecules in the air, as opposed to the other, which collect and trap it. So that's an important thing to understand. Whether you need the Molecule Air for large rooms or the Molecule Air Mini for smaller rooms, you can now choose the unit that's best for your space or create a bundle to provide an air purification solution for your entire home. PICO stands for photoelectrochemical oxidation. It's a technology that destroys VOCs, volatile organic compounds. It destroys bacteria. It destroys mold. It destroys viruses, and it destroys allergens. See, HEPA filters haven't been updated in 70 years. They were invented back in World War II and have pretty much remained the same since then. Molecule's filtration system doesn't just collect pollutants on antiquated filters, it destroys them on a molecular level. Traditional filters collect larger pollutants, but smaller ones can slip right through. While they may seem small, these tiny, tiny particles are a big deal to allergy and asthma sufferers. Molecule is your best defense against allergy season. You're creating truly clean air, combating allergy season by destroying allergens in any room in your home. Breathing clean air can help you sleep. Placing your Molecule air purifier next to your bed cleans the air you're breathing. And customers have reported feeling much more energized after getting the best night of sleep they've had in years. And of course, cleaner air is healthier air. Allergens and breathing issues can be triggered by allergens like dust and pollen and pet dander and other pollutants commonly found in indoor air. Molecule has been tested. It's been vetted and it's been proven. Molecule's Pico technology and filtration systems have been tested and verified by third-party laboratories like the University of Minnesota Particle Calibration Laboratory and Intertek. So you know you can trust them. Get Molecule Air for large rooms or the Molecule Air Mini for smaller rooms or bundle to cover your entire house. It is fantastic to reduce those issues. I can remember whenever we had the fires here just recently and we turned on the Molecule Air and the Air Mini in the studio and having that make a difference over time as it was quite literally destroying as opposed to just collecting those pollutants in the air. So for 10% off your first air purifier order, you visit molecule.com and enter our code STT at checkout. That's M-O-L-E-K-U-L-E.com and enter the code STT. Thanks so much to Molecule for sponsoring this week's episode of Smart Tech Today. And let's talk about projects. You know, I was talking to Matthew Casinelli before the show. That's, guy he's hosting. I'm sticking my thumb out there. I don't know if he's to my left or to. Oh, yeah, there we go.
Yeah,
about how, you know what? I have not had the mental capacity, the energy capacity to create or do a project involving smart stuff. And I was scraping my brain trying to think of one that I'd done recently. And I said, you know what? I'm going to talk about something that I did this week that was a project that made me happy. And that was making a carrot cake. So not too long ago, I saw Chrissy Teigen tweeting about some sort of dessert, I think, that she had made. And she was saying, you know, I've heard a lot of good things from people saying they really like this. Let me give you a new gift, which is this carrot cake that you absolutely have to try. And so I found this recipe. I think it's from Southern Living originally. And it is a carrot cake that includes a buttermilk glaze. It's a 3-layer carrot cake with buttermilk glaze and cream cheese frosting. And it has pineapple and coconut in it. Now, some carrot cakes will have coconut in it, but the pineapple really adds to the moistness, which takes it to the next level. So essentially, you make your carrot cake at first. It's 3 9-inch cake pans. Cook those bad boys. And then you make a buttermilk glaze, which is just like buttermilk and butter and sugar and deliciousness. And then when those cakes come out of the oven, you pour the glaze over each of them and you let it cool. So it already encases these cakes in this delicious sort of it's like a glazed donut is the best way to put it. And so it sort of like crisps around the outside, but it locks in the moisture of these cakes. And so then, you know, you're already protecting them, keeping them moist. Then you let them cool with the glaze on there. You take those bad boys out. You slap one down on your cake pan. You put the cream cheese frosting, a layer of cream cheese frosting on it. Then you stack the next one, you put a layer of cream cheese frosting on it, you stack the next one, you put a layer of cream cheese frosting on it, and then you sort of frost the outside of it, round that bad boy out, cut it up, and I'm telling you, you're going to have to do small slices because it is incredibly rich, an incredibly rich cake, but it was very, very, very good. In high school, I was a cake decorator it was sort of a side project that I did, but yeah, I made, you know, big, if you've ever seen like Cake Boss, the show where he makes, that's what I did. And so I would make, you know, Krabby Patty cakes and cakes for people's birthdays and weddings and things like that. And, most of the time you're using a pretty basic cake inside because you want to be able to make something that you can actually carve and make into different structures that you're doing. And so, you know, it's not often, or it hasn't been often, that cakes are where I decide to go with my baking stuff. I usually like to make pies and cupcakes and things like that.
Burnout on it.
Yeah. That's kind of the big thing. And so, you know, I haven't made a cake in a long time, and then making this cake that has this very satisfying texture. It doesn't look gorgeous by any means, but to have this satisfying texture and taste, and it kind of just reawakened my happiness of baking cakes specifically. And so this was a lot of fun to make. It was a lot of fun to eat. But like I said, small slices are definitely what you're going to want to do with this because it is very, very rich. But I think well worth the time that it takes to make it, and genuinely the best carrot cake I've ever had. I won't say best cake I've ever had because there was a German chocolate cake I had once that actually brought tears to my eyes, not even being dramatic.
I guess it is dramatic. Like,
yeah.
That sounds like something that would happen to me.
Yeah, it was. So this didn't bring tears to my eyes, but it was very, very good. And of course, for me, it was gluten-free. I followed the recipe, but subbed in gluten-free flour and stuff like that, wherever it needed to be subbed in. I just subbed those in. We'll include links to that in the show notes if you like carrot cake. And please, if you do make this, I want to know about it. I want you to send me photos of your carrot cake. Because I'd love to see it, and it would make my day to know that those of you out there are enjoying it as well as I did. So, Matthew, what's something that you did this week that's not necessarily a smart tech project that just sort of brought you joy?
I would say it was a little more inward focused, and is potentially smart tech adjacent, but I was spending a lot of time in the Shortcuts app because of me being me and being excessive. I have hundreds and hundreds of shortcuts, and they just weren't in the right order, you know? And so I changed that and reorganized all of them one by one. But the good thing is that I have the Magic Trackpad, and they added trackpad support like 3 weeks ago or something like that. I mean, time doesn't exist anymore, but for some reason, I think I had been trying to use it in a specific setup, and so I kept having to move around and bring my trackpad with me and wasn't always using it. But then I just kind of realized in Shortcuts, I like picked up a shortcut and held it with my thumb on the trackpad and then did two fingers to swipe, and I could pick up a shortcut and move it and swipe all the way where I needed to I don't want to understate this because I'm an iPad user, and this also relates to the new trackpad coming out of like, I have to use my arms to do all of that. And so when there's 100 of them, I'm like sitting here going like this and like dragging stuff all the time. And I just have RSI basically. And the thought of rearranging all of my shortcuts is it would take me probably a whole week. Like 40 hours of just like dragging around like little bits like that. And so I discovered that you could drag like this and accurately drop things. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I think I said that out loud because I was just like, this is so good for me specifically because I've needed this for so long. And then I also used another app called Data Jar. It just came out. And I've been putting a bunch of my information in there and using it with shortcuts. And it just kind of it's a visual way to structure my data. And then I can use it in shortcuts really easily. And then I use that to like help me use another app. And then suddenly like 8 things clicked in a row. And I was like, I'm like flying. So I did spend, I think it said like 39 hours in shortcuts, like just the shortcuts app last week. And I mean, I spent like 7 hours a day and stuff like that, but I have pretty much my entire shortcuts library. It is almost good to go, and it's probably up to like 500 that I'm going to be sharing soon. So I'm pretty excited about that. But yeah, I was heads down. Like, I actually started using, I don't know why I never use picture in picture on my iPad, but I just watched like a bunch of Parks and Recreation while I was doing it also. So that was pretty good.
Nice.
But I'm pretty pumped because the new Magic Trackpad keyboard. I don't know what they call it now. I think it's just called the Magic Keyboard Magic for keyboard. iPad.
Yeah.
Actually, this is my spoiler alert pick of the week, the iPad Magic Keyboard. And I wanted to pick it too and mention it because it is an expensive thing. Mm-hmm. And I've been struggling with this. I mean, with this show and just being a iPad type person of just like the cost of these things. But I did hear a good podcast last week from iJustine, who's like a famous YouTuber. And then Tyler Stallman, he's like a pro photographer who also does great YouTube work. It was just about like, people need product reviews for stuff like this because you don't want to spend your money on something that isn't going to be worth paying for right now. And so I thought that made me personally feel a lot better about just like trying to review something that is a $350 accessory for your expensive iPad. But at the same time, like, I'm going to try to really let people know, is this worth it or not for your setup? So
that's nice.
My pick of the week. And that is coming soon. So I'm super pumped because me specifically, like I was saying, I mean, I think it cut the time that I needed to spend on it like by five times less. So that was a huge difference for me. Like, that will make a difference for the rest of my career doing this type of stuff. So
it's
going to be fascinating.
What's the current order status of your Magic Keyboard? Processing or
I think it's shipped. I think it's in...
Wait, shipped?
Ontario.
Sorry.
I got it like the second I could. But yeah, it's still 2 days
I thought
away.
I did too.
Yeah, here by Wednesday. But
wait, hold on. You ordered it from Apple and it's coming on Wednesday?
Yeah.
And not Friday?
No. I mean, I was right there when it first came out and I was like tweeting with people like, did anyone actually order this yet? Because it's not showing up. So... I know that Apple sends out like review units, but I saw people in like New Zealand and stuff like that just getting them already. So I'm not, maybe it's just like the whole shipping situation is all messed up.
Okay. This is interesting. So mine just changed to, preparing for shipment today. So I don't know, I guess I'll see whenever I get my, is it FedEx or UPS?
I think it's UPS.
Gotcha. I'll have to wait to get my UPS My Choice notification or the FedEx informed delivery notification.
It's in like Ontario, California, which I've never seen it go through there before. So I wonder if, I mean, it could just be like a different product. Yeah, UPS.
Interesting. But
maybe they just have to like reroute things because they're prioritizing.
What is
your pick of the...
Yeah, my pick of the week. I had a dentist appointment scheduled right when the stay at home orders were put out. And those stay at home orders or shelter in place orders essentially made it so that only essential businesses, of which dentists are technically, everybody else is closed down. However, some dental locations, I think rightfully so, wanted to protect their employees. And so they closed down as well. So my dentist appointment, it was just to have my teeth cleaned. It was time for me to go in and have my teeth cleaned, was canceled until further notice. And so I love that as much as it can be painful or at least unsettling for a teeth cleaning. I love that feeling that you have, the 2 weeks after you've had your teeth cleaned. Yeah. The day of and so on and so forth. It just, your teeth feel so nice and clean and it's just good. And then I don't know about you, but then I start to slack a little bit after a while on, really flossing those bits. And so given that I can't go in for my 6 months, or is it 3 months, whatever it is, teeth cleaning appointment, I wanted to try to keep up with my cleaning in another way until I can go in. And so I ordered a Waterpik oral irrigator. This is a product that I've done a lot of research on because water flossing does have some doubters, I guess is the best way to put it, and some sort of skepticism. But I, you know, in reading about it and reading about what it does and reading about how it works and things like that, it is, if you're using it properly and if you have the right tools, a good way to clean your teeth. And what's kind of cool is that along with using water in it, you can put mouthwash into it. And so it can provide for an antiseptic clean as well. So I got the green one, of course. It comes in a bunch of different colors. Not only was the green one green, which was exciting, but it was also less expensive in the green color, and it was available to order where I didn't have a delay on shipping. So I got the green one. Nice. But yeah, if you've got for folks who I was almost going to say kids, but some adults have them as well. For folks who have braces, this can be really good to help clean out in between. And then it has a little tip in it that is actually, it's rubberized and it's meant to go underneath the gum line. And so you can actually get up underneath the gum line and clean out inside of there, which is what they're doing at the dentist's office. So, one of the things that they're doing at the dentist's office. So yeah, I was thought of that. See, for me, I'm like, oh yeah, get under there. so I was excited to get this. It's available for about $70. This is a pretty well rated one, and yeah, that is, my pick of the week. It's not a smart product, but it's a smart product. And so that's why I wanted to, share that one.
I guess I don't know if the brushing your teeth health sample thing also counts for flossing, but
they should have those as separate, flossing and brushing your teeth, so that I can
have one
of
these too, by the way.
Oh, do you?
And I do not use it, which is bad, but I don't have I mean, I live in a 100-plus-year-old home, and so there's no outlets near the like the bathroom sinks, so it's kind of not convenient is like the hard part. Because it needs to be plugged in. And I also like, I don't know, it makes a bunch of noise. And so I never want to do that right before I'm going to bed. I should put in my evening routine thing to do it at like 9 p.m. instead.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Get to see that video.
Don't have any late night snacks anyways either.
There it is, the pick pocket. Is that what it's called? PIK pocket? Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, gosh.
Get right under there. Oh, yeah. That's the stuff. For folks who are listening, Kevin is currently showing video of the different tools in use. So anyway, yeah, that's my share, my pick of the week, and I think it's a really fun thing. All right, folks.
I can even see on our video that your teeth are whiter than mine, so...
Yeah, it's
like, look at that. There's like shades. I got to get a light closer to my face.
Yeah, so there you go. You got to get a tooth light. That's all it is. It's lightly blue. And so when it shines.
I got to get RGB grill. That's what it is.
Oh my God. That's exactly what you have to do. Yes, I fully support that decision. Folks, if you have feedback, there you go. Questions, concerns, whatever. Actually, no, I was going to say you can send your cake here, but I want to see this on Twitter or somewhere else public. But your questions, all that kind of stuff, stt@twit.tv. We did just get an email not too long ago, but I'm doing some research into that. So if you sent an email recently asking for a question answered, you have been heard. Don't worry. We will answer your question soon. But that's stt@twit.tv. Of course, you can check out the show live. We record it every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. That's 4 p.m. Pacific, which is 2300 UTC. Twit.tv/live will get you there. And of course, you can head to twit.tv/live at any time and see the live stream and available on all the different platforms that we stream. Of course, don't forget to subscribe to the show. You just head to twit.tv/STT, stands for Smart Tech Today. And you can see that there are forms for subscribing in video and audio. audio. So we've got, you know, all the different video versions and audio versions on the different streaming platforms. Matthew Casinelli, if folks want to follow you online, see all the great work that you're doing, and mark when they've brushed their teeth, where do they go to do all that?
I'd say the shortest term place, you should follow me on Twitter, Matt Casinelli. And it's Cassinelli.
Oh, my goodness. if you're looking for me online, I'm at Micah Sargent on pretty much all the things, all the social media networks. And you can also head to chihuahua.coffee, chihuahua.coffee, which has links to my work and social media platforms. I get more Snapchat code ads than any other social media platform in existence. I don't use Snapchat, but I just on and on and on and on and on, constantly getting people adding me there. And I don't think it's because of chihuahua.coffee. I think it's because I wrote the iMore guide on Snapchat. And so people are seeing it in all the places that they see it. And it just, every day I go in and there's like 15 new people that have added me.
Wow.
It's kind of
popular over there.
Not at all. Cause I had to turn off the thing that says like anyone can send me a message, because on the rare occasion that I would open Snapchat, it would crash because I'd have so many notifications. And I'm not going to tap on those. They're probably nudes, yeah. Most of them. Well, scary. Anyway, that's the end of the show, folks. So it's time to say goodnight to your smart assistants.
All right. Say goodnight, Hugh Button. did the ASMR work?
Oh, yeah, I heard it.
And you can see all my lights are changing colors, too.
They're all going, what do we do? What do you want us to do?
All right. See you next week.
Yes. Goodbye, everyone.